I mix what I like, what I like, what I like.
All right, what's up, world? Welcome to another edition of I Mix What I Like. imixwhatilike.org, at I Mix What I Like for all your relevant social media. We are back on the bat phone, on the hate line with Dr. Hate, hating on the run.
Dr. Hate is not in the building anymore, man.
Dr. Hate's not in the building. Dr. Hate is on the road.
No. Dr. Hate is from another place. I just found out where I was from.
So let's break that down. Where are you from?
I thought I was an African living in this world, but I'm really trying to figure out where I am from the sunken place. I think they got me a long time ago, man. I'm not sure if I'm still under the hypnotic spell.
So obviously that's what we got here to talk about. I have a couple points I wanted to raise with you about the film Get Out, but let's have you pick up from where you just introduced. Tell us about what you thought of the film and how you see that relating to your sunken place.
So I was not initially excited about seeing Get Out. But the more and more I heard people talking about it, I was like, let's just go check this out. And then when I finally got in there, I saw my life for about 7 years of my life. And I was amazed that this was the first time I've seen a film from the point of view that I would take. And it was actually a little unnerving to watch some of my life on film. Like, you know, some of the, we talk Birth of a Nation and some of the fantasy world stuff, right? So there's the historical and then that fantasy world. But this piece was really just a beautiful metaphor of how life is to be an African in this white supremacist world. And I just kept thinking about it. I was like, how do they get us into this sunken space? And I realized the sophistication of white supremacy has a system that benefits white families. Every single member of the white family benefits from that white supremacist system. And the movie Get Out shows you how this stuff works. Because black folks then become an avatar so that white people can live their lives through the veil of blackness. So the way that this movie portrayed what it's like to be a black person living in cognitive dissonance, thinking you got white allies but recognize there is racism in the world, but when you think you got white allies, there you are trying to just go on with your life and, you know, do things in a way that you could depend on the support of your white ally, until you realize that those white allies have no intention on giving you any of the keys to your own freedom. And if you want freedom, it's got to be taken.
You know, I can't give you those keys.
You know, I can't. I'm looking for them, right? I'm looking for the keys.
In the Democratic Party. I'm looking for the keys in the Green Party.
You know you got those keys. What you mean? So it's like, you know, the last time I saw something like that was when Operation Free Shabazz was spoiled because Huey couldn't get a ride from his granddad to go break Milton K. Shabazz out of prison, right? It just couldn't happen. So this time, the white woman just wouldn't give me the keys so we could leave, so she could leave her family. Oh, man, it was troubling.
So
now, can we just say spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't seen the film? Do not listen to this anymore.
Oh, man, if you haven't, you know, that's whatever. Okay,
that's on them.
Right, that's on them. So
yeah.
So you mentioned a little bit of seeing your own life in the film. Obviously, I did. For a slightly different reason, but oddly similar. And I don't, you know, you can elaborate on your story as much as you like, you know, in a moment. But for me, obviously, I'm more fascinated by the fact that Jordan Peele is both so-called mixed with a white mother and also dating and soon to be married to a white woman, and that it's his written and directed creation that we're talking about here, and that I think has been, you know, in terms of a Hollywood cinematic release, this is to me as good as it has ever been. So that he would use, I think, first that he would use a comedic horror genre to tell his story is, I think, perfect.
Right.
I think that as I've said before, no one understands white people and white supremacy better than black America or African America. And within that group, those of us with a white parent know them and it better than anybody. It's always just a question of how much honesty can there be in a commercial media space. And obviously there's not much, but to the extent that there could be, it has to be told as a comedic horror film. Because that is, you know, the nature of the intersection and the interaction. So that was one thing. The other thing that I wanted to raise with you is that two things in particular. One, there's been a critique that I noticed during the film and predicted during the film, but also thought was going to be misread. There's been a critique from black women saying that black women were subdued and almost erased in the story. And, comedically and buffoonishly dismissed as the sister, the head police officer or sheriff or whatever, who couldn't see that this was a possibility and didn't, you know, hear the story, to the missing black mother who's never seen on film or really dealt with on film, or to the lead, sunken and enslaved house servant. That black women were subdued. But my thing was that if we look at it, and I don't want to speak not only to my own situation, this isn't autobiographical necessarily, and I can't speak to the biography of Jordan Peele, but I do understand that the reality is such that for those of us who are so-called mixed, there have been at times hostile relations with black people and black women in particular, and that where a black man or a mixed man like Jordan Peele might indeed have experienced a situation where black women in his reality were subdued. He does not have a black mother. It is part of the experience in some cases where so-called mixed or biracial or even just very light-skinned men are not favored by a large segment of black women as their dream mates or future partners, or that the social setting that they find themselves in, as may have been the case with Peele, they're not around a lot of black women. So I thought it was actually a very honest depiction, as he, I think, offered an honest depiction of the experience of so-called mixed race people and black men and black people in general in white settings. That would be a part of that experience. So that was one thing I wanted to just have you, you know, think about or respond to. And then finally, and I'll stop here, Sam Jackson has come out hating on the film, saying that a black American male actor would have done a better job than a British-born black male actor, which I thought was just fascinating that Sam Jackson would be hating on a film. Maybe it was because it was the one film that he as a black man didn't get cast in, you know, but anyway. So anyway, I had all that waiting for you, Dr. Haight. I wanted to, you know, so please take on any or more of that than I've offered.
So I appreciate the folks that are writing about the absence of black women and the marginalization of black women in the film. I think the point is made to marginalize black women because the person is living in such a cognitive dissonance, he doesn't recognize that his own abandonment of his mother makes him unable to face black women. Like, that's literally the psychological part of the film. It's like, this is why he has to be with a white woman, because he failed black women. So he doesn't take up the challenge until the end of the movie. And then when he does, that black woman is turned against him. So yeah, I agree with you. You do see these psychological issues playing out. But to the degree that he was so invested in his own dissonance and belief in white supremacy, that of course he's not going to be with a black woman. Of course he's not going to be with a black woman. Now, as I was mentioning before, you actually see some of the same dynamics in another film. So this film does some of the same things that you see in a Netflix joint called The Invitation. And I'm not saying it borrowed from it, but in The Invitation, you actually see the black woman recognize what's going on and go into fighter mode very quickly. Now, it might have been beautiful if at the end it was the black woman killing the white woman, like, I am not your help.
Yeah, right.
That might have been a beautiful moment, right? Like, yeah, eat this mud pie and die. But that's not really what happens in the film. So there are absences that say black women are marginalized in the film, but it's not as in the case of Nat Turner's joint, Birth of a Nation. It's not for historical inaccuracy. I think it's for psychological accuracy. That his world is not shaped by black women. And he's not recognizing the place of black women in his life. Because if he did, would he even be there? Right.
And then my point that from Jordan Peele's perspective, and again, I can't speak to his experience, it may very well be that black women were absent from his experience, so that they wouldn't figure centrally or any more than they do in the film, in the periphery. And that would also be an accurate depiction of his own mind's eye, at least, or his own experience.
So we already know then that is Peele's mother white? We already know that part?
Yes.
Okay. And then we know that he doesn't have influence from his father's family and the maternal, the paternal line doesn't have any women that influence him.
No, see, that's what I'm saying. I don't know enough about his story. And that's what I was trying to say, that this wasn't meant to be about his biography or certainly my autobiography, but it was just to make the point that I do realize that part of the so-called mixed race experience is that one or the other so-called racial group is not present. So if he has a white mother and is raised in that context and is raised in a largely white setting, which I know was part of your so-called unmixed black experience, there are similarities in terms of the absences of black people and women in particular as far as, you know, dating potential partners are.
So my 7-year bid in the bowels of white supremacy, where I was like, you know, one of five black youths, including my brothers, at any given time in the actual entire town, right? That experience alone shapes whiteness as the value that you can't have. Now, this is a millennial generation film. Fortunately, in my experience, there was no interracial dating allowed. Fortunately, right? In this situation, it's not interracial dating, it's interracial baiting. And so it's a perfect way to say that this interracial dating experience is actually white folks living out their fantasy of the other. So you get to see so many different ways that he's objectified by being touched, even the brother fantasizing about his genetic prowess. The white dude who's blind literally wants his eyes, and that eye thing was tripping me out because I'm like, Sam is tripping. They put an African actor in there to be the prototype of black people. And it fits more perfectly because then you can say, well, now you have this immigration experience, not the Ben Carson immigration, but the other immigration experience, not the voluntary immigration, because you still set Africa on fire from white America and the West, right? So all of these things are happening, but it's the African folks who come here and say we're going to make a way, right? So it does work really well.
Well, you put a lot of weight on it. I was just thinking the role was too revolutionary for Sam to play, and that's what the real issue is. Like Sam doesn't appear in revolutionary, you know, form on film.
Right. So we're dealing with criticisms. Let's deal with it, right? So we talked to black woman criticism. Like, let's deal with Sam's criticism, right? Does he think black folks in Britain don't have the right to talk about their experience with whiteness?
That's what he was suggesting.
Just listen to how foolish that sounds. The entire benefit, not the entire, but the largest portion of enslavement occurs because the Brits send their fleets out. And then they take over the spaces and colonize people and create enslavement routes that really center going out from Britain but never coming back in. So the madness, and I got folks who study this stuff, the madness, the psychological madness that you experience in the UK is something very different because of the lack of the ethnic density that you experience in the US, right? So my UK massive would be like, no, this is one of the most horrible places to be for black folks. And the sisters I knew from the UK would say, black men here don't want us. They straight up don't want us. Like, the entire England experience is like California. Like, they don't want black men out here, right? So now, if you sit with that for a second, this dude is primed to play that role. And you could feel like, yeah, it's stupid. It's like, yeah, these immigrants are coming over and taking our jobs.
But it's so also, now, yeah, go ahead.
So black America, African America, has the sole right to speak about racism and white people.
Again,
what about the South Africa?
Again, you keep adding depth to something I'm trying to make real light and trifling, which is, again, that this is Sam Jackson offering a critique of a film that has done, I think, more to raise an appropriate critical look at race and racism and even enslavement, as some have pointed out, than anything he certainly participated in. I'm like of all the films he's been in, I wonder what level of critique he'd be willing to put on those, to be then making this kind of ridiculous argument, about this film, which again, maybe I should have started with this. I agree with those who are saying that this is, as good a film we're going to get about, slavery from Hollywood as we have ever gotten and may ever get. That it's about the transmission or even mutation of that history from then to now, or the continuity of it, that smashes up against this idea that we've been moving in some linear, you know, path of progress. By the way, which is another thing I think is beautiful about the film, that it points its criticism at Northern elite white liberals. Obama voting, wine sipping, sweater wearing, you know, nice house having liberals, and which is a harder thing to critique than it is the Southern redneck cracker, who nobody wants to be around. Whereas everybody, whether they admit it or not, is well, obviously with important exceptions, you know, notable exceptions, but everybody is moving in the general trajectory of wanting to be in that Northern elite. Everybody wants to be sipping wine and talking about this and that and chilling wherever they are, you know, sitting back and enjoying the spoils of their claimed victories. But anyway, so, I mean, that's a harder criticism. He's critiquing Hillary. He's critiquing Obama. He's critiquing, you know, Bernie and everybody people, you know, love to love, and I think need, you know, much more critique and hate as we do here. But anyway, so.
But let's just say, and this is the problem of the movie, right? He does what's supposed to be done in a way that we've never seen a character get redemption in. So he literally takes this person on this psychological trip and says, the only way to confront your tormentors, if you want to break through this cognitive dissonance, is with the protection of your life, self-defense, and death of your tormentors. Now, I just keep thinking, like, what other movies do we get to where the person who's clearly tormented by whites because he's black gets to kill off his tormentors? Not destroy the system, because we still haven't figured that out. Like, what does it look like to destroy the system of white supremacy? That movie wouldn't be made until it's actually done, and then it would be like a retrospective piece on how it was done. A historically inaccurate film. So he does that in a way that says, I can't mess with y'all anymore. And we couldn't even get folks who were on the Bernie train to not vote democratically. Or folks who were on the Clinton train, once she showed that she's not an ally of African people, to say, I can't vote with Hillary anymore. It then became the lesser of two evils, which becomes a question of, would you rather be in a sunken place, or would you rather just be an avatar for white people? But that's the necessary trajectory if you stay on this path of voting democratically or voting for the system of people who say that they support you more than Trump supports you. And it's the scariest thing in the world, because the inaction would suggest, the inaction of us, my inaction, would suggest I'm still in the sunken place. And a lot of folks might feel like they're out of the sunken place, but there's only a few more, few Omars, and only a few Wills, and only a few of these cats who ever get out of that sunken place and take the actions of the lead character, Chris. So I think that's why it messed with me, because it was literally like, what would it take for you to get out of your own cognitive dissonance and take an action of freedom? Not preparing for freedom, but taking freedom.
It's also a new way of looking at Huey's revolutionary suicide.
Go ahead, break it down. Break it down.
Well, I don't know that I can. It's just coming as an initial thought. We'll have to get some of our the faithful, the audience to finish this thought out for us, because we only have a couple of minutes left. But essentially, that, I mean, the film is as even in the way you're breaking it down. The film is inviting people to kill off their ties to a decadent and dying society. It's not about necessarily having the full formed, successful, concluded revolution, depicted or achieved, but it's just taking that step of saying, I'm not participating in this anymore. Win or lose, I am going to make a full commitment to kill off the part of me that is preventing an attempt at real revolution. As I'm thinking about the brother that says, it's a literal suicide in the film, but I think it would be better for us to interpret it as a revolutionary suicide, where he's saying, I have to kill off this whole body. If I'm going to really get out of this sunken place, I have to kill off this body, this shell, that might be described as white supremacy or capitalism or imperialism. I have to kill this off, and my attachment to it, if I'm ever going to really get out of the sunken place, and very quickly, one of my students reported that on her
Jared, please don't leave that point though, because it wasn't suicide. There was a homicide first. And then he committed suicide.
Right.
So he actually saves the brother by killing the white woman and then kills himself.
That's right. That's right.
I want to frame that in the complete frame, because for those folks who are out there contemplating suicide because of their agreement and endorsement of white supremacy, I don't want you to think that suicide is an out for you. You got other work to do before you go. No, I'm just joking. Please don't commit suicide.
Well, that's why I'm saying revolutionary suicide and what Huey was talking about. And I do invite our audience to check me on that. I'm doing this quickly out of memory without any forethought or planning. And I don't want to do a disservice to what Huey was arguing, but his point was certainly not a literal suicide, but was more about an attachment to this decadent and dying society. So I would just, want to reemphasize that. But I did want to, but that is sort of what my point, or as I was trying to respond, like one of my students said that on her way out of the theater, a white woman came up to her and asked her how it felt to have a victory. And my student reported getting angry and having to resist the urge to scream at this woman as the woman walked away. But I was saying that would have been, that was unnecessary, because what was not in fact a total victory was enough of a terror to this one white woman, that sort of speaks to this point that even the act of a revolutionary suicide or taking out the immediate individual oppressor, which is not a total revolution for the community. It did not reorganize and radicalize relationships. It didn't do any of that. It was just an individual escape, which is, important enough, but that in and of itself was enough of a terror in the broader mind's eye of this one white woman that she would claim that this was a victory. I thought that was actually important and an important part of the film, that this is that one individual so-called victory, that is one black man surviving a horror film, is seen as total victory in at least in this one white woman's imagination. But anyway, look, man, let me give you a final word. We're gonna have to basically wrap it up here, unfortunately, but let me let you, Dr. Haight, close us out.
We will follow up on this at the African Psychology Conference at Bowie State University. I believe it's April 1st. We'll get a link to that. But that last scene was literally, I'm hoping you write about this, if you do write about it, that the dude who was the avatar, the grandfather's avatar, it literally looks like Frankenstein in that moment. But you get to see the scars, and he just looks like Frankenstein, and it's the Frankenstein moment. And I love that idea that this is Frankenstein's revenge. Like, you created us, so you got to go. You literally created your own death.
That's right. All right, yes, it is. It is April 1st. The ABC conference will be picking this up, and folks can follow up with that again at imixwhatilike.org. Dr. Haight, as always, appreciate your time, and we will catch everybody in the whirlwind. And as always, as Fred Hampton used to say, to you we say peace if you're willing to fight for it. Peace, everybody.
Get out.
I mix what I like, what I like, what I like, what I like.